Okay, now that I've had my little speech, let's move on. Another man who needs no introduction to Arsk. You all know who he is, past president, blah, blah, blah. Professor of radio and television at Moorhead State University, Dr. Michael Beal, is going to talk about the recordings of Peter and the Wolf.
Here's your clicky thing.
For the slides, okay, good, thank you. Every so often at these Arsk and Ayaza conferences, someone asks me what type of music do I collect? Well, considering that our two organizations evolved out of music library associations, this type of assuming question is understandable, but I'd like to point out at times like those that there are other types of recordings to collect, such as nature sounds and the spoken word. And although I love music and collect music recordings, my first love is the spoken word, especially historical and celebrity recordings. But my favorite recordings are where the spoken word is combined with music. Now, I don't mean singing, I mean the spoken word, like radio dramas and cantatas, and celebrity items like something in the common repertoire where there are many recordings available, like Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf. It was written in 1936 as a child's introduction to the musical instruments and symphonic music, and like most children of the 40s and 50s, I'd grown up with the piece. Over the years, I picked up many recordings of it by celebrities, and as I started to travel around the world, I tried to find foreign language versions. If you turn the projector on, Phil. I suddenly realized a couple of years ago that I had well over 50 versions of this one piece of music, and that I was, went too far. I was seemingly obsessed with it, which means that it was a good topic for an Arsk conversation here, a presentation. At the conclusion, oh, well, this doesn't help if they have that, if they have the timer on. Turn it off, Phil. Turn it off, Phil. Just turn it off. Yeah, at the conclusion of this talk, I'll distribute my discography of this piece, which contains over 150 different recordings. This work has been narrated by actors, conductors, musicians, newscasters, comedians, baseball players, and even a former First Lady and Ambassador to the United Nations. Over 100 of these recordings are narrated in English, and the rest are either instrumental versions or narrated in languages from French to Spanish to Finnish and Hungarian, Korean, Slovakian. There are even a few unknowns in it, and there are some unknowns because I haven't had access to the recordings. I just counted up the ones that I had last night, and it's about 100 of the 150 or so that I have listed here. The recordings date from 78 RPMs to even CD-ROMs, and in fact, due to a coincidence of the alphabet, the first item in the discography is one of those CD-ROMs. And although I haven't seen it because my copy is still on order, I think Prokofiev would be proud because the educational purpose of this work is being fulfilled. But let's get back to the 78 era when this piece was brand new. Two of the first three recordings, which introduced Peter and the Wolf to the English-speaking world and apparently to the world in general, have always struck me as unusual. As narrators of a story for children, Richard Hale and Basil Rathbone are mind-chilling choices. I tend to think of Rathbone either as the villainous sheriff of Nottingham or as Sherlock Holmes roaming through a dangerously foggy London night. I've been able to find almost nothing about Richard Hale, but I think this is his voice in the opening of the late 1930s radio horror program on Audio One. Well, the volume was down on that. I know that this is him in the 1953 film of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar in a very small but equally scary role, which you didn't get to hear. Bring the videotape up on this.
I hear a tongue shriller than all the music cries, Caesar, speak. Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of March.
Look upon Caesar.
What sayest thou to me now? Speak once again.
Beware the Ides of Moth.
Now I ask you, are these the kind of people you want your children to spend time with? If we can have the cut three on the audio cassette.
My dear children, each character of this tale is represented by a corresponding instrument in the orchestra. The bird by a flute. When the little bird saw the duck, he flew down, settled himself in the grass beside the duck, and shrugged his shoulders. What kind of a bird are you if you can't fly? Said he. To which the duck replied, what kind of a bird are you if you can't swim? And dive into the pond.
My dear children, young and old, each character of this tale is represented by an instrument in the orchestra. The bird by a flute. Saw the duck, he flew down, settled himself in the grass beside the duck, and shrugged his shoulders. What kind of a bird are you if you can't fly? Said he. To which the duck replied, what kind of a bird are you if you can't swim? And dived into the pond.
At this rate, why not have Frankenstein himself, Boris Karloff, narrate the piece? Actually, that wasn't such a weird idea, but it did take until 1965 for Vanguard to make that recording, and he's been joined by another horror film star, Christopher Lee, in a 1989 Nimbus recording. But what else would you expect from a company that reuses electrically recorded 78th plate through a horn? I think Victor missed the boat. I think Victor missed the boat by not having their star children's narrator, Paul Wing, make a recording of Peter. The third largest record company, Decca, however, was seemingly on the right track when they had their version narrated by their children's record star, Frank Luther.
We are going to tell you the story of Peter and the Wolf. In this story, each character is represented by an instrument of the orchestra. The bird is represented by a flute. Seeing the duck, the little bird flew down upon the grass, shrugged her shoulders, and said to the duck, what kind of a bird are you if you can't fly? The duck replied, well, what kind of a bird are you if you can't swim? And dived into the pond.
So until after World War II, these three were the only recorded versions. But why were these performances so stiff and stuffy? Did it have something to do with the way it was written or the composer's intentions? Could it perhaps have been something to do with the way it was performed in the original language, Russian? Although Prokofiev had been a resident of the United States for many years and knew how to speak English, the piece was written shortly after he and his family returned to the Soviet Union to live, and the narration was written in Russian, not English. And so I set out to find versions of the work in Russian. And as many of you know, I've been sponsoring the membership of our first Soviet member, Nikolai Sergienko, of the Ukraine since my presidency about 10 years ago. We've traded records for his dues, and so I asked him to find Peter and the Wolf. And I assumed this would be relatively easy. After all, it had been written for Russian children. It had been, I know I've read that how the Russians loved and cared for their children and how they published children's literature in all the languages of the Soviet Union. I figured there was a recording at least in every major language of the Soviet Union, used maybe even the same music bed. But I was wrong, quite wrong. I got my first hint of trouble when Nikolai wrote back an inquiry, do you mean Prokofiev's Opus 67? He didn't seem to be that familiar with the work. He had to look it up. And I don't see any recordings available of it. And I've asked my collector friends, and none of them have any recordings of it. Yikes, over here, recordings of Peter and the Wolf are so numerous and common you can't help tripping over them, like Francis Craig's Red Rose and Near You on Bullet Records. I'd expected a pile of Peters in my first package. Nearly 10 years have passed, and Nikolai has yet to turn up one copy of any version of Peter and the Wolf from the former Soviet Union. And even when I had a catalog listing for one recording on Melodia, Nikolai had no luck. Last year when Alexander Tikhonov was visiting here from Moscow, he told me that he was having similar troubles. But at least he was able to come up with a listing of the holdings in the Russian State Sound Archive. There have been only 4 narrated recordings made in the Soviet Union of this popular work, none in stereo. And the first one was not made until 1947, more than 10 years after it was written. All have been in Russian, none in any of the other languages of the former Soviet Union. That first recording was a 3-disc 78 RPM set that was recorded by Mertskaya in 1947, 11 years after the premiere. And that might be too long a period of time to unlock the key to the initial performance style. But anyway, I would have liked to have been able to play an excerpt and show the labels on the screen, but due to the inactions of the old line bureaucrat now in charge of the archive, I was unable to gain access to these recordings for the entire month I was in Moscow this summer. But if we'll start this videotape at the beginning, go all the way back to the beginning of the video cassette, and the first cut on the video cassette, if we will have that. I do have some pay dirt for you. I'll do a voiceover on this. When I arrived in Moscow, Alexander took me to Dom Kinigi, the House of Books, which now has a used record department on the second floor. With videotape running, he led me to the classical section, and I started looking. He asked the clerk if she had Petya I Volk. And she just reached down, pulled out a 10-inch LP, and handed it to me.
Michael, in this point, maybe like Peterson Wool, ma'am. Began to show.
Alexander was so excited,
yes,
he started to pay the girl for the record.
That's the first LP in the catalog.
But this wasn't America. This was Russia with the three lines.
We hit pay dirt.
You wait online and pick out your items.
It's not America.
Okay, hold on to it. I'll keep
looking.
That's
you
fantastic.
Go to a second cashier's line and pay for the items, and then you
been
come back to the first line
years.
And get the receipt and get the item. The 10-inch LP is narrated by Litvinov. I'm not so sure who he is. This was released in 1955. And the narration style is a little flat with some flashes of acting on occasion. Audio cassette 5, please.
Увидев утку, птичка слетела на траву, села рядом с уткой и пожала плечами. «Какая же ты птица, если ты летать не умеешь?» – сказала она. На что утка ответила: «Какая же ты птица, если ты плавать не умеешь?» И плюхнулась в лужу.
Perhaps we can get closer to the original performing style via a 12-inch Melodia LP that was released 15 years later in 1970. It contains the narration of Natalia Satz, the woman who commissioned the piece from Prokofiev for her Moscow Children's Theater and who was planned to have been the first narrator. She passed away last year just as Alexander was trying to arrange an interview with her, but fortunately, she had already detailed the creation of Peter and the Wolf in her autobiography. First of all, she clears up what is possibly a common misconception. The story of the Peter and the Wolf is not an old Russian folk tale or dream story, as they call it, nor is it an adaptation of one. The story was written, conceived, and entirely by Prokofiev himself, especially for this piece. It's apparent that apparently it was Satz's idea to combine music and speech, although she says she had never heard of such a work before. She relates that it was also her idea to use the piece to introduce children to the musical instruments and their specific sounds, and that the characters might be animals and birds and at least one human personages. It was Prokofiev's idea that the role of each animal or bird would be played by a single instrument, and the many-sided human character would be, say, a string quartet. Prokofiev's ideas continues. We should begin with specific and striking contrasts, the wolf and the bird, evil and good, big and small. The characters' individualities will be expressed by the timbres of the different instruments. Each of them will have a leitmotif. The next part of Natalia Satz's tale is perhaps the most revealing in explaining what Prokofiev's performance intentions were. Things began badly, she wrote. I invited a poetess, an admirer of Prokofiev's music, to work up our ideas in the form of a scenario. Prokofiev threw it out at once, and I got a good dressing down for my pains. She did it all in rhyme, he said. And the balance between the words and the music like this must be very delicate. The words must know their place, otherwise they may lead the listener's attention astray instead of helping his perception of the music. Satz continues, Prokofiev was right. The fragile and complex process of creation had already begun in him, and the diligently written doggerel had nothing to do with the music had naturally infuriated him. Satz narrated the first run-through of the piece in her office with Prokofiev at the piano. She said, he wrote the text out for me in parallel with the music, the way he wanted it to sound in actual performance. Later, I would have to learn my part thoroughly to recite it artistically in time with the music. Unfortunately, she was ill when time came for the premiere, and there's some confusion as to whether Prokofiev was the conductor or the narrator at the premiere on May 2nd, 36. He described the performance as rather poor and did not attract much attention. 3 days later, at a festival of Soviet art to be attended by an international audience, Prokofiev stayed on the sidelines for a performance with Polovatkin conducting and Satz narrating. It created a sensation, she said. Unfortunately, this recording of Satz is at least 20 years after the fact. Not only is she older, sounding like a Russian babushka or else my Jewish grandmother, but she may have been influenced by stylistic changes. But her purpose was not to accurately document and recreate her opening day performance, but to create an interesting record. Tape 6, please.
Увидев утку, птичка слетела на траву, села рядом с уткой и пожала плечами. Какая же ты птица, если ты летать не умеешь, сказала птичка. На что утка ответила, а какая же ты птица, если ты плавать не умеешь, и плюхнулась в лужу.
What is clear is that Prokofiev intended the voice portion to be a narration. It could be dramatic, but it was not meant to overpower the music or really be musical itself. This does not mean that there had not been some flashes of music in the narration in even the earliest recording. Listen to Richard Hale's introduction of the bird in both his 1939 and 1954 recordings, and note how similar they are. Audio tape 7.
On the branch of a big tree sat a little bird, Peter's friend. When he saw Peter, he chirped at him gaily. Oh, quiet city.
On the branch of a big tree sat a little bird, Peter's friend. When he saw Peter, he chirped at him gaily, all's quiet, hee-hee.
Prokofiev intended the narration to be done by a single individual person, not a cast of actors. The instruments were to be the actors, each taking the part of a character. The voices of numerous human actors playing the different roles would have probably been counter to his intentions. There have only been a very few recordings that utilize more than one voice, and ironically, one of those recordings is by Prokofiev's son Oleg, which utilizes Oleg's son Gabriel in the role of Peter. The CD-ROM entitled Chuck Jones's Peter and the Wolf stars Christy Alley and Lloyd Bridges with Ross Malinger as Peter. Ventriloquist Jimmy Nelson as some of his sidekicks play some of the roles, but it's done sparingly. The only dramatic versions with a cast and sound effects that I know is an album in MGM's Stereo Motion Children's series and another by United Artists' Famous Theater Company, and unfortunately, I don't have either of these latter two. But before all of these, the first real break in the traditional performance style as prescribed by Prokofiev came when Walt Disney included Peter and the Wolf in the 1947 follow-up to Fantasia, Make Mine Music. In a Disney TV program, Walt described how Prokofiev himself was brought to the Disney studio in Burbank in 1938 and performed it for Walt on the piano. The actor portraying Prokofiev here is uncredited, assuming that it's not actually Prokofiev himself. This is videotape two.
As I said, this was back in 1938, and we were in our old studio then, and we were very crowded for space. So when Mr. Prokofiev arrived and wanted to play for me, I had to scratch around to find a piano. Here's a room. I'm afraid it isn't much for piano, though. Don't worry, Walt. It'll do. To make matters worse, Mr. Prokofiev spoke very little English. And, of course, I spoke no Russian.
Each character has a musical theme. The one he just played was that of Peter the Boy. Now he's going to play the theme of the bird.
And that's how it was. And as he played, he told us the simple, charming story of Peter, the little peasant boy, and his hunt for the ferocious wolf. I remember how his fingers flew over the keys of our battered old piano. How his face glistened with perspiration as he concentrated on the music. And all the time I could see pictures. I could see his lovely fantasy coming to life on the screen.
If that's him, I haven't been able. Yeah, sure, I. What? Oh, the wrong finger. That's the first thing that I thought. That's the first thing I also thought. But he had been separated from one wife at a point, and they switch finger. They switch hands at that point. In the post-war film, and in two different versions available on record, Sterling Holloway takes the role as narrator in the traditional way, but the text is dramatically embellished and enlarged. The music has been shortened and scored to follow the action of the cartoon. Using radio drama narration techniques, the recording Holloway did on Victor is a superior synchronization of the words and music, but they do not follow how Prokofiev intended the narration to be. Most of the music you hear in this excerpt was supposed to be performed without a voiceover. Tape 8.
Look out! What's that shadow? The wolf! Oh, it isn't the wolf at all. It's only Sonia the duck. Hello, Sonia. Huh? What's that? Oh, no, Sonia. No, you can't join the party. You can't run and you can't fly, and that old wolf would eat you up. Oh, no, absolutely no. Oh, all right. You can come. Wait, there's something following us. Oh, it's only Ivan the cat. Hello, Ivan. Now we're all together. Peter and Sonia the duck and Sasha the little bird and Ivan the cat. Ivan, stop looking at Sasha that way. Sasha, look out! Stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it! Oh, how can you ever hunt the wolf if you try to eat each other up? Go on now, make friends.
Thank you.
Ivan, you're a bad cat. Tell Sasha you won't do it again. There. That's better. Come down out of the tree, Sasha. Ivan's sorry. He'll be good.
The reason why I don't have a real picture of the real album is because the dog ate my records. During the immediate post-war years, there were several other versions for children that took similar liberties to abridge and simplify the piece. Most were made by small companies and special children's record series. No more complete recordings appeared until several years after the introduction of the LP. I'm going to skip over a section where I had a recording of Henry Morgan from a concert recording from 1946. Again, as an example of celebrity performances of it. Peter and the Wolf was present at the birth of the modern LP, as the old Rathbone recording was part of the initial Columbia LP release with the famous Tombstone cover you saw before. But for a while, there was nothing else. Then, as 1950 ended and London and RCA Victor began their jump on the LP bandwagon, two 10-inchers from them appeared. Unfortunately, I don't have either of them. A Frank Phillips narrated for London, and RCA Victor presented on both 45 and LP the ultimate celebrity recording, Koussevitzky conducting the Boston Symphony with Eleanor Roosevelt narrating. It didn't stay in the catalog long. It was gone by the time they could get Richard Hale to do their new recording with Fiedler and the Boston Pops. And that new Hale recording joined another Fiedler recording with British actor Alec Guinness, also on Red Seal. A recording of British comedian Wilfred Pickles on the RCA Bluebird children's series, and by a release of the original Hale recording on a brand new subsidiary, RCA Canada, anonymously at first as the Centennial Symphony Orchestra. Who are they trying to kid? Over at Columbia, CBS radio and TV personality Arthur Godfrey narrated it with Castellanets. At first, this recording joined the Rathbone in the Masterworks series, but after a few number and coupling changes, both recordings were demoted to the popular CL series. The Rathbone is part of the album called Peter, Tubby, and Pan. Low price label Royale had it, someone named B.D. Walker, and still trying to be a prestige label, Fox Vox had a recording by ill-fated child star Brandon DeVille. As I speak, the only one of these recordings available now on CD are the DeWild, Guinness, and the original Hale recording, the latter on Pearl. As the 1950s progressed, it was firmly established that celebrity narrators would be used. Sewell Richard, newly famous with kids as Captain Hook to Mary Martin's Peter Pan, appeared on Columbia with Ormandy in the Philadelphia. TV host Gary Moore appeared on Westminster along with some animal sound effects in the introduction. Those two became the first stereo versions. Carlos Montalban's Spanish recording on Monitor was the first non-English version to appear in Schwann. It also marks the beginning of another era in the recordings of Peter and the Wolf, the overdubbing of the narration onto a pre-recorded orchestral recording. This is used for scheduling convenience to enable the performers to not have to redo things because the orchestra or the narrator made a mistake. It also, however, is used to get multiple versions in multiple languages and also to help small labels get a version out without having to the expense of a whole orchestra. And all of these latter reasons were evident in this particular recording because the one used by Monitor was the USSR State Symphony Orchestra conducted by Rodzinski, which was originally used for the 10-inch Melodia LP by Litvinov. In addition to the recordings in Russian and Spanish, it was also used in a badly edited state by Wonderland Records for a narration in English by Frank Milano, and might possibly have been the same recording on a French version by Gerard Philippe and La Chambre du Monde, and I don't have the last one to be able to confirm that. The Godfrey recording might also have been an overdub because there's a version in Dutch by Manus Willemsen on Philips conducted by Castellanets. And American Columbia and Dutch Philips were very closely affiliated at that time, but I don't have the Dutch recording to compare. In the discography, you'll see recordings in multiple languages conducted by Lauren Mizell, John Williams, Zubin Mehta, Eric Kunzel, Claudio Abbado, Kurt Nagano, Herbert von Karajan, and Carol Ansarel that are known to contain the same orchestral tracks. Some but not all of the recordings by Andre Previn, Igor Makovich, and Roberto Benzi are the same as each other. I'm not sure about the Bernard Haitink and Sketch Henderson recordings, but all of the recordings by Koussevitzky, Fiedler, Stokowski, and Ormandy are obviously all different recordings, sometimes made decades apart. Time is getting short, and I haven't had a chance to even name some of the other interesting narrators, let alone play excerpts. Actors, well, we have Richard Attenborough, Eddie Bracken, LeVar Burton, Carol Channing, Sean Connery, Dom DeLuise, Mia Farrow, Jose Ferrer in both English and Spanish, Will Gere, Sir John Gielgud, Hermione Gingold, Lauren Green, Melissa Joan Hart as Clarissa, Jack Lemmon, B. Lilly, Bob McGrath, George Raft, Tony Randall, Rob Reiner, Sir Ralph Richardson, Arnold Stang, and Peter Ustinov, twice. Fernandel in French and a very young Romy Schneider in German are international names Americans will recognize. Baseball players, well, we have one, Tom Seaver. Newscasters, or should I say newsreaders, we have Angela Rippon, who happens to be a protege of our very own Joe Pengelly. I could have included Lauren Green, but his recording was made during his Bonanza era. News commentators or magazine editors, there's William F. Buckley. Other broadcasters include Milton Cross and Terry Wogan. Musician, of course, is Leonard Bernstein narrating his own recording, which is mercifully also available without narration. Andre Previn also narrated a recording which he conducted, but if you wish to avoid his narration, you have to get the other recording he earlier conducted that was narrated by his then-current wife, Mia Farrow. Another musician on the list is tuba player William Bell, a friend of Fred Williams, who narrates a symphony band version which was arranged and conducted by the late Robert Hawkins of my own Morehead State University. Symphony band is not such a far reach when you consider that there have been several jazz versions, one narrated by Hans Conried, and an instrumental version starring organist Jimmy Smith. A real far stretch is the rock version narrated by Viv Stanshall, because half of the music ain't by Prokofiev, and even the music that is by Prokofiev doesn't sound like it. Tape 11, you have two to skip over. Cut 11 on the audio cassette.
The janitor is played by the accordion.
Cut 11. That's the end of it. Go back to the beginning of cut 11.
All right. Now I've changed
way too far back. Don't you have direct key in cut 11? You're numbered. That's why we use RDAT, because you have the program numbers on it.
This is a story about a little boy called Peter and of the day he met a horrid wolf. You'll soon get to know Peter and his friends in this adventure because they all have their own special musical sounds. This is Peter.
Symphonic versions narrated by rock musicians. David Bowie with Eugene Ormandy on one of the ugliest looking records that has ever been released. The green with the red seal label is ugh. And another version with Sting with Claudia Abbado. This later version was made into a TV program. You can have now the videotape 3, which was called A Prokofiev Fantasy, which stars the spit and image puppets.
There.
tell you a story. This is the story of Peter and the Wolf. It's a musical story where the characters are represented by different instruments of the orchestra. For example, the bird is represented by the flute. The hunter's rifles by the timpani. The little bird flew down upon the grass, settled next to her, and shrugged his shoulders.
What kind of bird are you if you can't fly?
Said the bird. To this, the duck replied,
And what kind of bird are you if you can't swim?
And dived into the pond.
Now, while we're on the subject of comedy, there have been some noted comedians who have recorded this, in addition to the comic actors included on the actors list. The late Michael Flanders made an appearance without his longtime partner, Donald Swann. Now, we can't forget to mention the manic Jonathan Winters, and apparently I did forget to include two broadcasts by Fred Allen and Rich Little in the discography, and I'll get the data for a redo. But I want to pay special attention to three of my all-time comedy favorites, two of whom twisted the story of Peter and the Wolf to almost unrecognizability, and another who's just plain twisted. The former two are Peter Schickele and the late Alan Sherman. Not too long before his untimely death, Sherman appeared with Fiedler and the Boston Pops at Tanglewood with several pieces, including the insightful End of a Symphony, where he tore apart several symphonic endings to the point that they have never been the same to me again. I highly recommend it. Also in that concert and on the live recording on RCA Victor Red Seal is Peter and the Commissar, which after sitting outside the office of the director of the Russian State Sound Archive for almost 3 hours, I have come to appreciate more and more. Now cut 12, audio cut 12.
The room was filled with silence. It was thick enough to slice. Then at last the Chief Commissar said, "That's nice." The other commissars agreed. It was practically unanimous, except for one who disagreed, the stupid ignoramus. Then the chief said, "It's wonderful, it's perfect, but..." And Peter, with tears in his eyes, said, "But what?" Said the commissar, "You've got some problems in your second movement. That's where we're going to make our first improvement. Now, don't get us wrong, Pete, we love what you wrote, but here and there we'll just change one little note." He shouted, "I've got it, it's heaven, it's bliss. Here's how we'll change it, Petey baby. Just listen to this." The commissar said, "What do you think, Pete? Now don't be cautious." And Peter smiled weakly because he was nauseous.
More recently, Peter Schickele westernized the work as Sneaky Pete and the Wolf, cut 14. 13, rather, cut 13.
One day, Sneaky Pete pushed open the swinging doors of the Last Chance Saloon and sauntered out onto the street. Laura was beautiful, all right, but she was something of a tomboy. And Sneaky Pete decided to tweak her a bit about it.
kind of a woman are you if you go around wearing pants all the time? Said Sneaky Pete.
Laura looked him up and down and said, what kind of a man are you if you got butterflies in your stomach? Oh, she didn't miss a thing.
But since Spike Jonze never got to do this to this piece what he did to Nutcracker Sweet and many others, I'm glad to report that the twisted mind of Weird Al Yankovic has collaborated with the electronic wizardry of Wendy Carlos to present a comic version that is surprisingly close to the original. Yes, he does add additional characters, you'll hear, and there are a few melodic interpolations a la Victor Borga. But most of the humor comes from the added aside remarks, much like is also done by Jonathan Winters. You know, tape 14, audio tape 14.
Hello, boys and girls. This is a story that I like to call Peter and the Wolf. Are you sitting comfortably?
Are you?
Oh, good. Then let's begin. Each character is represented by a different instrument of the synthesized orchestra. For instance, the part of Billy the Bird is played by a flute, like this. As always, the part of Bob the Janitor is played by the accordion. Billy the Bird saw the duck, so he decided to fly down and pick an argument with him.
What kind of bird are you if you can't fly?
He said, to which the duck cleverly replied,
I'm a duck, stupid!
I also want to use Weird Al to end my talk with a discussion of the ending of the piece a la Alan Sherman. Although I really don't like the ending, I think it's much too anticlimactic following the capturing of the wolf and the parade march to the zoo. And yes, there is a long crescendo that can be used to highlight the dynamic possibilities of the orchestra, but the crescendo ends too suddenly and abruptly. Tape 15.
Flew birdie chirping merrily. My, what fine fellows we are, Peter and I. Look what we have caught. And if one would listen very carefully, they could hear the duck quacking inside the wolf, because the wolf, in his hurry, had swallowed her alive.
Dramatically satisfying is the way Sterling Holloway ends it in the Victor Kids recording. The action is allowed to rebuild following the parade. Now you see, however, that Disney would not allow a sad ending, so although we get the same sad duck music, you'll see that it builds up again to a real climactic ending when you see that the duck's fate is not as Prokofiev had intended. Tape 16.
Oh, happy day! I think I'll say that again. Oh, happy day. Oh, Pete.
Peter, what a hero.
No.
You too, Ivan. What a triumph as we parade through the town. Can't you just hear all the villagers cheer? Hooray, hooray, hooray. Everybody's happy, except the wolf. But little Sasha isn't happy. He's flown back to the hollow tree, thinking of his lost playmate, Sonia. Poor Sonia. Sonia. Sonia! Oh, then you're not dead. You hid in the hollow tree. You are safe. Oh, Sonia, this is the most wonderful, wonderful day. Now Peter can go hunting whenever he likes, and we'll all live happily ever after. The end.
Well, maybe the change in the story's ending is not to your liking. Well, I want to leave you with perhaps the only really honest rendition of what Prokofiev's ending entails. And as we send you out to a belated lunch, perhaps you'd want to consider how Weird Al interprets the implications of the duck's fate. Cut 17.
What about Bruce the duck? Well, the wolf had been in such a hurry that he swallowed him alive. Which means the gastric juices slowly dissolved his body and he died a long, painful death. However, you'll be happy to hear that just a few years later, he was reincarnated as Shirley MacLaine. And the moral of the story is, oral hygiene is very important. Make sure you see your dentist at least twice a year.
Thank you, Michael. Are those hands hand out, Michael?
What about Bruce the duck?
Those handouts?
Well, the wolf had been in... What about...
Okay, listen, as Michael said, your lunch is going to be shortened. Try to get back here at 2 o'clock. No more Mr. Nice Guy. We start at 2 o'clock, and whether you're here or not.